The Place to Be podcast is now a proud member of the History of WWE.com website. The History of WWE.com features thousands of complete cards and detailed results from throughout wrestling history from multiple major promotions, in addition to outstanding columns and reviews. It is now also the official home of the Place to Be podcast and Scott and Justin's pay-per-view reviews. Visit us at thehistoryofwwe.com or on Facebook by searching The Place to Be podcast or The History of WWE. The Place to Be is now the History of WWE.
Now, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer? The billiard room? No. The billiard? Not billiards. It was... Come on, everybody. What? Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes. It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another exciting episode of the Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and tonight's a very special edition of the Place to Be podcast. As we teased on the Facebook page, we have some pretty big news, but we'll get to that in just a moment. Joining me, as always, straight out of Newark, Connecticut, the original Dick Dale, my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you doing tonight?
Good evening, Mr. Rosero, and happy Memorial Day to you, sir. A nice long weekend that we had to relax. And yes, it is a huge, huge show for us. Huge show for us tonight.
Yes, and before we get to that news, let's just quickly bring on our man, our basketball specialist, Andrew Reich, joining us from Louisiana. Andrew, how you doing tonight?
How's it going? I think I figured out the Bobby Heenan soundbite. I think that was when he introduced Ric Flair on Prime Time.
That is, you know, I'm not even sure. Our man Derek Lou put that together. He picked up that piece for us. So is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Prime Time Wrestling from September 9th, 1991. When Flair came out for the first time.
It was Bobby Heenan's two-hour orgy. It was glorious. I remember.
Yes.
I was at a sleepover watching. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yes, it was tremendous.
And the one man who could definitely confirm that for us is, of course, our buddy Graham Cawthon, the purveyor of the history of WWE.com. And that is a beautiful segue into our big announcement here tonight. And that announcement circles around the continued growth of this podcast. Now, we are now 35 episodes in, and we want to thank all our listeners who've made this way more popular than we probably imagined it being this early on. And things are only going to grow from here because our friend Graham reached out to us and asked if we'd like to join the history of WWE.com family. And of course, we jumped at that chance and we have agreed. And going forward, all of our podcasts and reviews will be found directly at thehistoryofwwe.com. It's basically going to be our new home. Our message board obviously will still remain Place to Be. Message board at bigelow34.proboards.com, and our Facebook page is not going anywhere. The Place to Be podcast Facebook page will remain, but now we're going to be in conjunction with the History of WWE Facebook page and their website. So you know, we're very excited about this. Graham's a great guy, very popular guy, so we're hoping some of that rubs off on us. And just to give you a little information about what our podcast is, we try and do about two episodes a week. One is usually generally a headline show where we'll talk wrestling, sports, pop culture, whatever's floating around that week that we feel like discussing. Sometimes we'll get into some wacky rants and arguments as well. We also, in lieu of headline shows every now and then, we'll do specialized theme shows. Like last week we did one talking about social media and The Office. We've done one about Jersey Shore. We have some interesting ones coming up throughout the summer. We're going to do focusing on specific years throughout history, talk about wrestling and sports, and also we're going to do some movie reviews of classic kind of campy movies as well. Any of our Facebook fans know, we had a good discussion back and forth about Suburban Commando this past weekend, so that's definitely one we want to do a podcast on. We thought that'd be pretty funny. And our second podcast every week is called the Vintage Vault. And Scott, I'll let you explain what the Vintage Vault is.
Well, the Vintage Vault, folks, goes back to when Justin and I have known each other for almost 8 years now. And obviously our common theme was wrestling in the beginning. And it's a very funny story. When I first moved down here to southwestern Connecticut, I didn't have DirecTV, so I didn't have anything to watch. So I threw in WrestleMania 1, and I had nothing else to watch. I threw that in, and then I threw in WrestleMania 2, and I was just watching chronologically. And him and I were chatting. We were both coworkers at the time. I am still in the same place. He has since moved. And he's like, well, why don't you write about it? Why don't you review the show? And really? All right, sure. And we started, and that simple suggestion has blossomed. And we have reviewed every WWE pay-per-view on print from WrestleMania 1 to the last one we've done is SummerSlam 2006. So we thought it would be a good idea to kind of bring it to the cyber world and took our written reviews and discussed them on our podcasts. So the Vintage Vault is we open up the big metal door, and I only have the keys, and we pull out a vintage World Wrestling Federation / Entertainment pay-per-view. And we are currently up to the last one we did last week was WrestleMania 5, which was fitting because, of course, last week the terrible death of one of everyone's favorite wrestlers, Randy Macho Man Savage. But we have all of our previous Vintage Vaults archived on our site, and you can grab them on thehistoryofwwe.com now. And Justin and I just kind of banter back and forth. We talk about the matches, the backstories, the feuds, the builds leading up to the matches, and just our general comments. And it's great because we not only get a lot of info, but a lot of our fans go onto our Facebook page and put their own comments, their own memories of these matches and these shows. And it's a good chance to kind of go back to your childhood. So that's what the Vintage Vault is. And we do that at least once a week.
Yes.
That's our once a week show. That's definite. So for all of our fans, people got a little nervous last week because we did three podcasts last week, which is very rare. We usually do two. But people thought we were giving up our – because we did a special memorial podcast in honor of, obviously, the great Macho Man. And people thought we were doing WrestleMania 5, but we don't like to disappoint our loyal listeners. So we did do that anyway, of course.
And we also request you to go on our Facebook page or the History of WWE Facebook page. And I'll leave your feedback. You know, we usually make an announcement earlier in the day or the day before. Hey, we're doing this podcast. Tell us what you think about the show. And then we'll always, any feedback you leave us on any shows, we'll read on air.
Absolutely.
Definitely be proactive about leaving that feedback. And also,
yep.
If you're looking for an archive, I'm not sure how Graham's handling the archive regarding our past shows. I know going forward, they'll all be on his site. For any past shows, you can find them in three locations. First is our Podbean page, which is our major host of the show. And that's Place to Be Podcast. I'm sorry, it's just placetobe.podbean.com.
Right, exactly. Yep.
The second place is on our Facebook page on the Place to Be podcast. Just type that in, or you can go to facebook.com/placetobepodcast. On the left-hand side, there's a tab called Podcast Files. If you click that, you can listen to all the episodes right through the Facebook page. Yep. Thirdly, you can also subscribe to us via iTunes and listen to us on the go or, you know, wherever you may be. So those are the three places to find us, and now the fourth will be thehistoryofwwe.com. For anyone listening that's not aware of that website, it's a tremendous one. I suggest you check it out. A lot of cool information there for you to mine through. So we'll definitely be pimping that as the weeks go on. Graham's a good guy. We want to help him out. He likes us. He wants to help us out. So hopefully this will be a pretty good mutual relationship. And Scott and I are both lifelong wrestling fans. Very, I think we're knowledgeable sports fans as well. So, but we also like to inject a little bit of humor, and we don't mind taking shots at ourselves as well. So,
nah, not at all. And let me tell you something. Just a quick pump, the history of WWE.com, for anybody wrestling fans out there, 90% of the time, if you're having a debate with someone about something, whether it's an event, a city, a match, a skit, an event, a heel turn, anything, 95, almost 100% of the time, history of WWE.com will solve any debate. He's got everything on there.
Mm-hmm.
Everything on there. So definitely go there. You can't go wrong. So,
all right. So I would like to with that said, and anyone who has any questions, you know, just let us know. We can explain further on that, and we'll be talking more about that as the weeks go on. But let's move now on to basketball, and our buddy Andrew, we actually lost him, so I'm going to call him back. So we may get a moment of silence. So just hold tight 1 second.
Sure, I could do little advertisements again. HistoryWWE.com is a great site. Graham Coffin, one of our dearest friends, he's been on the show. There is a podcast.
Hey. Hello.
In North Kakalaka.
Hey. Andrew, are you on here? Are you with us?
Yeah, did I get lost all of a sudden?
I think so. Can you hear Scott?
You there? Yeah. All right, awesome.
All right, Andrew, we are recording right now still, so we're live on air. Welcome back.
Thank you. I don't know what happened.
You fell into the LeBron zone.
No, I fell into the heat index, and I got two more.
That's right.
And that's another good segue. So, Scott, you done wrapping up, or you done vamping? Yep.
Just want to talk about, again, Graham is a great guy. And definitely go to his site, historywwe.com, and we are now there as well. So we're one big happy wrestling family.
And with that, let's transition into some NBA. And I have to take a moment to celebrate and plug my team. Once again, the Mavericks of Dallas, owned by the great Mark Cuban, featuring Hall of Famer in waiting, Dirk Nowitzki, Hall of Famer in waiting, Jason Kidd, taking care of business, wiping out old man Scott's Lakers, wiping out little Andrew's Hornets, taking care of business against the Oklahoma City Thunder, and now they will wipe out the evil, hated Miami Heat.
Larry Hagman would be celebrating this right now if he wasn't in a self-induced coma.
Yes. Bobby's still in the shower with his wife, but everyone thought he was dead. just like they thought some guys in Dallas' careers were dead. So, but clearly not.
So just but to, clearly not. Just to fill in what we're talking about here, the new listeners here tonight, any basketball fans. At the beginning of the playoffs, Andrew joined us, and was Matt Rattel on that show as well, the NBA preview?
Yes, he was. Yeah.
Okay, we all made our picks. We went right through, and the man sitting right here in Rhode Island, Justin Rosero, he prognosticated the Dallas Mavericks and Chicago Bulls to make it to the finals. Now, I came close on the Bulls. They just ran out of gas, and maybe we're slightly just not ready to take that next leap. But, of course, I was correct in picking the Dallas Mavericks, which very few people I saw out there. And I was pretty proud of myself because I gave legit reasons as well.
You said I was jumping bandwagon. I picked Dallas to beat L.A. I thought it was going to be more of a struggle. You know, Scott did a much, much better pontification of the Lakers' struggles on one of his entries. But I don't know what happened to the Lakers. Dallas just rolled them.
Dallas is playing very well right now, and you know, I think there's any team that can slow the Heat up, because the Heat have finally put it together and have finally clicked. You know, their struggles they had earlier in the year where they're trying to learn how to play together, those are gone now. I mean, they're rolling. But Dallas is rolling too, and they're playing very confidently.
My feeling with the Heat is that when they beat Boston, because I wasn't convinced they could beat the Celtics at full strength, but when they beat Boston in five games, I started to feel like, okay, the Heat are really going to make a run now.
I was surprised. I made a mistake, and I'll be the first to admit it. I made a mistake when we made our, and I'm admitting it right here on the air to all of our old and new listeners to the place to be. I made a mistake, and I predicted with my heart. I really wanted one more Celtics Lakers NBA final, the two old outlaws standing kind of like Undertaker and Triple H, standing in the middle of the dirt road with their guns at their sides with a couple of bullets left, and then go off into the sunset. I thought maybe these two teams had 1 year left. The Celtics' problem was they just got old quickly, and Miami just lapped them. I thought Boston had just a little more left in the tank, and they didn't.
Well, the Lakers finished the same way that Triple H did at WrestleMania 27, receiving a fine.
Well, yeah, but at least they were close. He was close to winning that match. Unlike the Lakers, who after the first two games realized they weren't going to win the series and quit. Mm-hmm. And for those that, for our newer listeners, peruse back to the archive a bit and listen to my. I'm not going to go into it now, but I went into a good 4 or 5 minute rant. But I'm a huge Laker fan.
Yes, we'll I believe about the episode was entitled Rantamania. I think it was Rantamania. Like 28. Rantapalooza. I'm sorry.
Yes, and I won't get into it now. I want everyone to listen to it and enjoy it. If you're a Laker fan, you'll enjoy it because it was all fact. If you're a Laker hater, you can giggle at me that I'm whining, but that's your prerogative and that's cool.
If you need to know anything, according to Scott, Andrew Bynum created AIDS, killed Jesus, and bombed 9/11. I mean, he did all that all rolled into one.
Yeah, and he didn't know how because he was such a baby, he couldn't figure it out and then cried about it at the end. But the Lakers just – when they blew they had an 8-point lead with like 4 minutes left in game three in Dallas. When they blew that, I sat here at my TV and said, I'm not even going to watch game four because I already know what's going to happen. And sure enough, halftime, they were already down by 18. And I'm like, I did what I thought they would. They mailed in the check and went home.
In game three, they had them. They had them where they wanted them. And Dirk took over, and they started making these threes. And the Lakers just kind of wilted. Game four was a coronation.
Game four, they shouldn't even walked on the court and played. Because exactly. I knew it. It was just like game four in 2008 in the finals against the Celtics. Mm-hmm. When they gacked that 28-point, almost 30-point lead. It was like 24 or 25. And then game five, they only won because they were at home, and they almost blew that one as well. And then game six, they stopped caring by halftime. Same thing with this series.
But for every yang, there's a yang. And Dallas is just, Oklahoma City felt that brunt. They're just playing so well. And they're playing in a total harmony from man one to about man number 10. I mean, it's almost like they're getting perfect rhythm and perfect balance from every position and from every role, and it's getting a little scary. We'll talk deeper into it, but I think Miami's going to have some problems.
Well, the thing too that's good for the league in this case is, and good for fans too, the Heat have kind of become so hated, and I think Dallas is a very likable team. I know how some people feel about Mark Cuban, not a fan of him, but. You know, you look at some of the guys on that team, and it's just guys that have hung around so long that really deserve to be champions at some point. And they're playing so well. They're such a fun team to watch right now. And like you said, a lot of harmony in that team. And it's hard not to root for those guys, I think. It's hard not to root for Kidd and Nowitzki and, Barea and those guys. You know, there's fun guys, and you get a bunch of old guys, clinging to win one last title. And it's just, I think it's a good face-heel matchup in this NBA Finals.
I mentioned this about a week ago. It's revenge of the 2005 All-Stars. It's almost like all the really good players from the early 2000s that were complimentary guys that couldn't get it done on their own have kind of slowly melded together to create this like 2004-2005 super team. If they played in 2004, they would have like won the NBA Finals going away. You know, they got Jason Kidd and Peja Stojakovic and Dirk Nowitzki and Jason Terry and Sean Marion. I mean, they've got all these players that are a little bit past their prime, and in a lot of these guys' cases, way past, but they seem so determined because none of them have won a ring. I don't think any of them have won a championship.
Well, Jason Kidd was close. A couple of times, obviously, back-to-back Eastern Conference championships.
I've talked about those Nets teams before.
Yeah, they were good.
We've thought about those Nets teams before.
Yeah, I mean, the one year they had no business against the Lakers, and they did the best they could, but they just didn't have the talent. And in 2003, they gave the Spurs a decent run.
Did they get swept both times?
No, I think the Spurs beat them in six.
The Spurs and the Nets win six games. It was actually tied at 2-2 apiece. And for reasons I'll never figure out, the NBA had the Nets and the Spurs wear ABA uniforms because they were both ABA franchises. And
did they really? I don't remember that. Really?
Game five, the tiebreaker, they both wore ABA uniforms. Now, in the Spurs' case, it wasn't much of a difference. But for the Nets, it was the Irving days, and it just had Nets on it, and it had like that lining. That was back in when retro was way, way in the urban market. Everybody was wearing throwbacks, and I hope they never do that again. So when the Nets watch when Nets fans, all 20 of them, when they watch highlights of the game five, when they get beat by the Spurs by 11, they're wearing throwback uniforms. It's pretty sad.
Yeah. So Jason Kidd was close. Jason Terry seems like he's been in the league for like 20 years, but he was on that. And obviously we have a rematch here. By the way, this is also, and this is obviously complete, joking. This is the first sponsored NBA Finals because the 2011 NBA Finals, just like the 2006 NBA Finals, is brought to you by American Airlines. Maybe they'll have some free tickets because obviously both arenas
are the American Airlines.
Yes, you have the American Airlines Arena in Miami and the American Airlines Center, which is in Dallas, which is actually quite hilarious.
It's also sponsored by Bennett Salvatore's Body Shop.
It's like the Briscoes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but we've got two loaded teams. Justin, we could start breaking down if you'd like. We got two loaded teams here. Well, why don't we lay out the outline and break it down and see how we'll go about it. You want to go lineup by lineup? How can we shake this?
Yeah, well, let's look at the Mavs depth chart. Obviously, they got Tyson Chandler starting in the middle, Sean Marion, Dirk Nowitzki underneath, and Deshaun Stevenson / Jason Terry and Jason Kidd up top. They also have J.J. Barea and Brendan Haywood, Peja Stojakovic kind of playing the major bench roles. And I think Bobois has been in there too in the mix.
Yeah.
What's scary about that team is that they played most of the season without Bobois, who's a really good 3-point shooter. And Carlos Boozer. That dude has no business in the NBA Finals. Caron Butler, who's a really good player. He was in Washington for many years and mm-hmm. in Miami. Actually, his first 2 years in the league, played with Dwayne Wade when he was a rookie. Got traded for Shaq. And Butler was a really good player. I felt like when Butler was healthy, that Dallas had was the best team in the NBA. He got hurt, Dirk got hurt, and they went on a losing streak. But he might play, but I don't think he will. He will only play if the Heat are up 3-0 or 3-1.
Right.
And Rick Carlisle gets really desperate.
And now, how do we feel about Carlisle? I think he's always kind of overlooked as a coach, but he had such a good run with Detroit. Pretty good run in Indiana too, doing what he could do. And now, I think he's kind of proven himself as a coach. He kind of was under the radar all year this year, I think. And
my take on Carlisle has always been as a head coach, he never really had great talent when he was in Detroit and Indiana. In Indiana, he got that Indiana team, I think, like a 62-win record in 2004 after he had just gotten fired from Detroit. But he only got fired from Detroit because Joe Dumars was in love with Larry Brown and knew he could get Larry Brown to coach the team. But when Carlisle was there, he had Jerry Stackhouse as his lead guard. And then the next year, they had signed Billups, but they had, I think their starting power forward was Corliss Williamson. They made the trade in the middle of the year in 2004 with Rasheed. And that's when that top five of Rasheed, Billups, Hamilton, Prince, and Ben Wallace molded under Larry Brown. Carlisle never got that opportunity with a really loaded team. And even when he got to Dallas, when he got the job at Dallas, a lot of people were angry. A lot of people thought, and I kind of thought too, this is a really ho-hum hire. I mean, this is not a hire that's going to really, you know, break piggy banks, because they had just fired Avery Johnson, who had gotten him to the NBA Finals. But this was his thesis as a coach, and I think Carlisle knew that. You could see on the bench he shaves his head. I heard a story that he had fainted on the sideline. You could tell that Carlisle this year was just super determined mm-hmm. to get this team as far as he could, and it showed.
And he looks like Jim Carrey with a shaved head, I think.
He looks very odd, yeah. He looks like Danny Ferry, but He did a good job, you know, and I could segue that really quick with the Mike Brown hire in Los Angeles with Phil Jackson leaving. My feeling on that, you know, maybe Scott will rant off again, but my feeling on it is that I think people are looking at the finals and they're looking at the coaches and they see that one of the coaches is Eric Spoelstra, a guy who, especially on my behalf, took a ton of heat, a ton of crap from people for not being a capable coach. And Carlisle, who had had his hiccups in the past and had been doubted before, remember, he had lost in the first round as a 2-seed against the San Antonio Spurs. And I think they're watching this and they're saying, you know what, we might not need the greatest name in order to get our team as far as they can. And so they hired a motivator like Mike Brown, who could get the reserves to try to play better defense and make them play with a little bit more heart. Because if you saw with the Lakers at the end of their series, they had no heart. So I think that was the reason for the hire. I still thought it was a bad hire.
Well, we'll get into Mike Brown later. I obviously vehemently disagree with you, but we'll get to that later. We'll talk. Rick Carlisle, I was never, you know, I didn't like, he was okay in Detroit. I was never a big fan of his in Indiana. I thought he was kind of flat. I didn't like his substitution methods. But I will say that I agree with Justin in the sense that I think he really kind of buckled down and really put himself to the grindstone and really wanted to push this team. Obviously, this team has more talent than any other team he ever coached before. And
I think there's a key there too, that it's veteran talent.
Exactly, it's older guys who know the game. And Jason Terry has been a maverick for God knows as long as Mark Aguirre, I guess, or Roy Tarpley. But he has a complete team. He's got a good substitution method going. He's got guys he could swap in at different times. He keeps guys fresh. He really knows what he's doing this year.
Having veterans are key for him, because he seems like the kind of coach that maybe isn't the best, you know, young motivated coach. He's almost like just kind of like a Popovich, just almost like an innkeeper, just kind of, you know, all right, you guys go out there, run the offense. You know how to run the defense. I trust you. You know, I'm here to drop some plays, make the substitutions, and just don't fuck anything up. And he seems like a perfect coach for that, you know, and that's kind of what the Lakers need. Whether or not Mike Brown can do that, we'll see.
And I think the key for them is not only that they got veterans, because you see a lot of teams with different veterans, but the year totals from player to player are very weird. You know, there's a 5-year veteran, there's a 14-year veteran, there's a 10-year veteran. This is a team that almost has a wave of players that pretty much came into the NBA at the same time. So even though they hadn't played each other for that long, together for that long, like Stojakovic or, you know, Sean Marion and Jason Kidd, I think they know each other's games really well because they've been around each other for so long on a competitive level that when they came together, I don't think the experience together was that much of an issue compared to a really young team like the Thunder that tried to figure it out really fast and kind of flamed out.
And also, I think adding to the chemistry part of it is playing for a good owner. I mean, Cuban, you know, treats them well, treats them with respect, gives them everything they could possibly want. If they need to make a move, they can make a move. You know, they have top of the line amenities, for lack of a better word. You know what I mean?
Have you seen the backstage stuff of the Dallas locker room?
Yeah, it's insane.
Like,
he's got that ridiculously deep coaching staff. So, you know, when you have an owner like that, that makes it easy to want to play, especially for veteran guys that just kind of want to be left alone to do their thing. And the good thing for Cuban, too, is he's kind of learned this year. You know, he's kept his mouth shut. He went on a self-imposed embargo because he felt like he was getting, you know, screwed by the media a lot of times, and he's tired of getting fined. So he shut his mouth. He goes, he roots on his team. And I think not having those distractions around the team have helped as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like George in the later years with the Yankees. I mean, he still would peek his head out sometimes, but he wasn't the first face you saw when the Yankees would win a World Series game. He's kind of a little bit more kind of down, you know, a little bit behind the sideline. Cuban still stands by the bench because that's the kind of owner that he is. He's proud of his team. But I remember in the finals in 2006, I remember they were doing features on him running exercise bikes, and you saw every facial reaction of him after every call. It was almost like Mark Cuban was coaching the team. Mm-hmm. I think he kind of learned the lesson from there that nobody likes a self-preening asshole. And I think Cuban got that stereotype as the series went along. So it was hard to root for the Mavericks because – at the time, Cuban seemed so unlikable because he was covered so heavily.
Exactly, and there's still a controversy today that, you know, if you go back to that 2006 finals, the Mavs won the first two games at home, kind of close games.
There's no controversy at all.
Once they hit Miami, you know, Dwayne Wade averaged like 29 free throws a game.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And you know, it was getting out of hand. I understand, you know, I'm not taking anything away from the Heat in 06. They played great. But I think the referees in that 5-year stretch from 02 to 07 did not do a very good job. And I know we're not gonna wax about the 02 Western Conference Finals. I'm tired of hearing about it, but it was the beginning, and you know what? The Mavs still had the Kings still had game 7 at home, so I don't want to hear it. But the fact remains is that the refereeing in those 5 years was pretty lousy. And that 06 finals, they stuck it to Cuban bad. They were tired of his crap. They were tired of his whining. They were tired of his chair kicking. And in baseball, I'm sure they wanted to stick it to Steinbrenner and the Yankees in the 80s and the early 90s when nobody could stand him. But you really can't screw over a baseball game. There's not enough calls to do that. But the NBA, you could do it easily. And I think they did that in those finals. I mean, Dwayne Wade had like 100 – those last four wins by the Heat, he had to have shot like 115 free throws.
Well, he gets to the point where he was just hurtling his way into the lane and they call everything a foul.
Yeah, it's like being in his driveway after a while. It was ridiculous.
And it was – here's the back and forth. Here's what happened. There's back and forth in every situation. And I think where Dallas really lost the series was game 3. They had a big lead and basically blew it. They can't blame the refs. They just blew the lead. They had like a 10-point lead with – less than maybe 4 or 3 minutes to go, blew it, and they got and Wade won the game. But the key happened on three things. Number one, Jerry Stackhouse, who was one of their key guys, got suspended for a flagrant foul on Shaquille O'Neal, which is hilarious. The fact that Shaquille O'Neal can sell a flagrant foul, and Jerry Stackhouse got suspended for the game 5, which was enormous. And in game five, what happened is that Dwayne Wade got, I believe, something to the degree of 20 free throws. And there was one particular call that you could plainly see on internet clips where in the overtime, down 1 point, Wade went inside. He basically took a dive and got the foul and hit free throws. And Josh Howard stupidly tried to call a timeout in between the free throws when they didn't have any timeouts. So so they couldn't advance the ball. So with less than 2 seconds left, they had to try to pass the ball from under their own basket, and it was impossible to get a shot off. In game six, Alonzo Mourning, for whatever reason, maybe because it was sympathy, basically got to do whatever he wanted inside against the big guys of Dallas. He was blocking shots and pushing guys and doing whatever he wanted, and I think that was the three keys to why the Heat won that series.
I mean, it was definitely a frustrating series, you know, on many levels, and a lot of people obviously won't give that Heat team, you know, deserve it or not, the credit, because the first thing you think of, obviously, is the lopsided free throw calls. But like you said, Dallas had that chance in game three, and they let it slip through their fingers.
Well, let me say, that was the best Detroit team. Of the teams that got to the conference finals or the finals, I think the 06 team was the best one. And they
was that the Artest Melee year, or was that the year before?
No, that was the next year when Flip took over. And when Flip
it was 06-07, yeah.
Yeah, he took over, and they jazzed up the offense a little bit. That was the year where all five Piston players were playing together in the All-Star game in Houston, Texas.
Yeah, and that was kind of the turnaround for the Pacers too, right? After that Artest thing, they never really were the same.
No,
they were really good, right? When that happened,
yeah,
that brawl.
But not only did they lose Artest, Jermaine O'Neal and Steven Jackson got suspended.
Yep.
I mean, huge, huge losses.
Yeah, and that team. No, there's no doubt that team was never the same after that. And then, you know, guys left, and then it just, you know, the payroll got shrunk, and the Pacers haven't been the same in the last 4 years. I mean, they made the playoffs a couple times. They made the playoffs this year, but they were never the same. That was ugly. That was like about as low a point as you can get in athlete fan interaction. That's a whole other debate for another day, but it sunk to a pretty new low for those two teams, and really neither team has been the same since.
These two head coaches do have experience as assistants for NBA Finals teams. Rick Carlisle was an assistant coach on, even in this era that I hated, which was late 90s, early 2000s NBA basketball, where scoring just went into the sewer. One of my favorite teams ever was Larry Bird's Indiana Pacers, because they played hard on every play. They shot a lot of threes, but they didn't shoot too many. They had a star player in Reggie Miller. They were clutch. It was one of my favorite teams. It was one of the only teams that really, really gave the Chicago Bulls a tough effort, you know, in their prime years. And Rick Carlisle was an assistant, and Eric Spoelstra was an assistant, I believe, all the way into the years when Alonzo Mourning and Dan Majerle and them were there.
Now, moving on from the Mavs quickly, let's move on to the Heat and kind of talk about their depth chart, of course. Everyone knows the three big starters, Wade, LeBron, and Bosch. Joel Anthony's been coming up pretty big for them in these playoffs. And Mike Bibby has pretty much been a corpse at point guard. You know, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, Kidd, because Kidd's been playing like he's like 25 in these playoffs. So we'll see how he does. He should be able to work around Bibby pretty well. And, of course, the main guys coming off the Heat bench, you've got James Jones, Mike Miller, Juwan Howard.
It's the flavor of the week. They always find one guy that can kind of do something. James Jones had a game against the Celtics where he just went crazy.
Yeah, he went out of his mind.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a game where Udonis Haslem played great against the Bulls.
Yes.
It just seems like, you know, it kind of reminds me of the Bulls in 96 and 97 and 98. They're not nearly as good as those teams. I'll never compare them. But it seems like out off the bench, they always get one guy, whether it be Judd Butchler or Steve Kerr or Brian Williams, who turned out to be Bison Daly, who's now dead. They seem to always get one guy off the bench who you'd never expect to give contribution to the top guys on the court and kind of push them over the top. But, I mean, it's easy to make shots when there is nobody covering you, and that's what happens with Haslem a lot, with James Jones a lot. I mean, these guys, I can't believe how bad Mike Bibby is. I'm watching Mike Bibby, and I remember when he was a killer in Sacramento. I mean, you were scared to death of Mike Bibby if you were a Laker fan, and this guy can't hit anything.
Now, imagine when they get a legit point guard, which is possible in this offseason. I haven't really looked at who's out there or what they're going to have for cap space, but
I don't think it matters. I know this. I know it was very experimental with what they did with the veteran minimums for these players. I'm telling you now, after watching the byproduct of just the first year of this season with Miami, how many players do you think are going to want to go there?
Yes, definitely.
A lot. That's the key for me. I mean, they say, well, they'll never take the pay cut. Oh, yes, they will.
Oh, definitely they will for a year or two to take a shot at a ring and to play with these guys. Yeah. And, you know, I've always been a LeBron fan. I didn't like the way he handled the decision. I didn't have the beef that a lot of people had with him the way he went to Miami. I know there are some people, our buddy Chris James being one of them, that believes this is all collusion and this shouldn't have been allowed and it's all bullshit. I don't believe that. I'm fine with the way things went. I don't like the way he announced it. I thought that was kind of
that's
backwards.
Exactly. Yeah.
But he's really kind of proven a lot of the doubters wrong in these playoffs because he's made some big shots and some big moments. And he's kind of been more of the alpha dog than Wade, I think, throughout these playoffs, which a lot of people thought was the opposite with this team, especially during the season because it seemed like Wade was always the one taking over. But he struggled in a lot of these games, and LeBron has really pretty much come to play every time.
I think in the postseason, Wade, LeBron, and Bosch basically did the Care Bear share because I'll tell you what right now, as much crap as he's eaten, I mean, he's had YouTube videos just mocking him to death, and it's somewhat given sometimes his regular season output. But in the postseason, pretty much in general, Chris Bosh played extremely well.
Yes, he definitely has, especially against the Bulls.
I couldn't complain about anything he did. He was fierce. He was getting to the free throw line. He destroyed Carlos Boozer in the Chicago series. I mean, Carlos Boozer, you watch that series now, and you can't believe the guy got $80 million.
I mean, there was a story on ESPN about that saying that they should trade him.
It is amazing how one series can completely and utterly change your mind. Like the Pistons when they beat the Lakers in 2004 or when the Magic beat the Cavaliers in 2009. The Cavs were 66-16, and they had lost two games at home all year. So you're thinking, this team's going to be one of the best ever. They got everything. They had swept their way to the third round, and the Magic beat them in that first game, and LeBron saved them in the second game. And you could just tell immediately into that series, Cleveland is nowhere near as good as Orlando outside of one position. And I felt that way with Chicago and Miami. It took me about three games to realize it, but I could just realize, you know, they only got three guys, really. But sometimes it only takes three guys in the NBA.
And it makes you wonder, too, if the Bulls maybe wouldn't have spent that money on Boozer. And maybe, you know, if LeBron or Wade had said, screw Miami, we're going to Chicago. Yeah. And the two of them with Derrick Rose and Noah, that could have been a hell of a team. I think it would have been even stronger than this team.
Absolutely. And the philosophy on the thing is, it's hilarious how it's flipped upside down with one series. It all of a sudden turned from the Bulls are the deepest team in the NBA to the Bulls are a one-man show. And now all the talk is going to be, is Derrick Rose going to want to leave because he can't win there? Mm-hmm. That's the funniest thing. They want to complain about how LeBron did his decision. I hated the announcement, but I didn't, as a basketball decision, it was extremely smart.
And I've seen Celtics fans bitch about it, and I'm like, you know what? That team set the template.
That's exactly what you did.
Yeah, they set the template. You know, like Garnett refused to pretty much go there until he saw that Ray Allen was there, and they kind of set the stage for that veteran troika. And, you know, I've seen Celtics fans be the ones that bitch about this, and I just don't get it. You know, like you said, that's why now the league is going to go that way. That's why the Knicks are now going that way. If they can try and get Chris Paul, then they have Paul, you know, Carmelo and Stoudemire. So, you know, they're going to be teams that are going to move this way to try and lure in to have their gang of, you know, two or three major stars.
Well, the one thing about the movements that, and I think we talked about this months ago, and that the one thing I liked about the movements with the big threes that are kind of congregating around the NBA is that it creates a sense of urgency.
Yep.
And urgency creates high competitive level. I'll say this for the Heat and the Celtics, and even with the Heat and the Bulls, basketball-wise, quality-wise, they were turd busters. I couldn't watch the fucking games. But in terms of drama, it was really intriguing watching them because you could tell with the Celtics, it pained them to lose to Miami.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It wasn't, oh, well, we lost, let's go home.
And I think that competitiveness is shown through, you know, in what's been a tremendous season and a tremendous, tremendous playoffs. A lot of great games, and also an interesting thing, I meant to bring this up before. how many big comebacks have we seen throughout this playoffs? It's pretty crazy how many, you know.
The Portland one still tops it.
Right. I mean, you got that one, and then, you know, you have the Dallas one where they came by, they came back, with under 5 minutes to go, and also the one with Miami on Chicago in the clinching game.
Dallas against the Lakers, they were down 15 in the fourth quarter.
Yep, yeah. So, and then Dallas had another one, did they? Was it against Oklahoma City?
Yeah.
No, they were up big. They were up big. What was it, game four?
Oh,
that's
right, the Thunder came back, yeah.
Yeah, they were up by like 21, and Oklahoma City got it down to like four, and then Dallas ended up winning by like eight or something.
Memphis did it to Oklahoma. So yeah, there was a lot throughout this playoff. So just, and I think that speaks to competitiveness, like you mentioned, just a lot of gritty, great comebacks.
Well, when the Lakers went down, I think the Western Conference turned into a wild, wild west. I think people realized, oh, this is our chance. And I think you saw the a business picking up trademark to on the side of Memphis and Oklahoma City, because I don't know if they thought they were going to beat the Mavericks, but I think they felt better about their chances.
Yeah, I think the balance going into this is in terms of lineups, matchups is going to be key here, because you've got a pretty big lineup for the Heat. I mean, LeBron is pretty big. Wade's a pretty big two, could play a three. I think the big situation for Dallas is how they're going to match up that front court, because if you start pushing all the big guys up front, you know, Jason Kidd's going to have a lot of easy passing lanes, and you know, he could get to the free throw line. It's going to be a big, it's going to be an interesting situation for Miami on how to match these guys up, because LeBron could match up with guards. He could, if he covers Kidd or covers Terry, then you lose some size inside. And as much as, I mean, Udonis Haslam's not a bad player, but he's not any of these other guys. Dirk really needs, and Dirk deserves this more than anybody else. Here's a guy who's never made a stink, you know, as a player. He's had some off-the-court issues, but who doesn't? But he's just been a solid, quiet guy, complete antithesis of his owner, and this is another chance for him to win, and he deserves it. So how he approaches these finals is going to be huge, because he can, the guy's obviously a great shooter. He could play inside. He's a, you know, he's got a huge body, so he could get to the free throw line. He could drive to the hoop. He could post up. He's a pretty good passer. So really going into the series, it's all about Dirk Nowitzki and whether or not he decides, I'm going to kind of hang around the 3-point, stretch Miami's defense out, give the inside some.
He's going to play. No, he's going to play underneath, right? I mean,
Or he's going to work inside, get these guys outside to be open, Jason Terry and Stevenson and these guys, get them open and kind of collapse the middle and give the shooters a chance to shoot.
Miami's played some insane defense, too, in these playoffs.
Yeah. Defensively, their numbers are good. They're not the most cunning defense, but they're probably the most athletic defense. I remember watching a timeout clip with Doc, and Doc Rivers is the greatest soundbite coach of all time, because he'll say some funny shit. And one of them was he was talking to the Celtics bench, and it was during the Miami series. He says, if you think you're going to out-athlete this team, you are out of your mind. Because when you got LeBron on the weak side and you got Dwayne Wade ain't no pushover either on defense.
Mm-hmm.
And they just do the most insane things. Chris Bosh, you know, he gets killed a lot because Garnett had a good game against him in game three. But I remember when Paul Pierce went to the rack and Bosh ate that thing like it was dessert. You know, I mean, he's a good shot blocker. The thing is, for Dallas, they have the depth, and the depth might be able to help them with kind of trying to neutralize LeBron if he goes to the lane too often and trying to gobble some fouls, which is what Brendan Haywood is pretty much there for. The one problem for Dallas is that a big key for them against Oklahoma City was Sean Marion, who kind of like went back to the future. I was waiting for the flex capacitor to fall out of his shorts. But because I hadn't seen a game like that out of Sean Marion since, you know, Steve Nash had really long hair. And I don't think he'll be able to have a game like that in the series because of LeBron's matchup. I mean, Sean's going to be in foul trouble all day long, you know. And I think they're going to sic Stevenson on Wade. They're going to get an aggravating glue guy type guard to basically sic on Wade. And then they're going to give Barea the ball at the point, you know. Maybe they'll take Kidd, you know, against Chalmers and Biddy, But I'm not sure how that's going to go. I mean, Dallas might experiment a little bit because they have such a great luxury with Barea, a guy who no one really knew until then, until about maybe the second round of the playoffs. I mean, that guy, he had takeover moments in the playoffs.
All right, so with that wrapped up, I do want to get to some other topics before we go too long. So let's just quickly make our prediction here, and then we'll go ahead and move on to a couple other topics. So, Andrew, what do you see happening here? Let's give the winner and the MVP.
I think Dirk's going to win it, the MVP. I think the Mavericks are going to win it in five games because the format is 2-3-2, and it means that the first two games are in Miami. The next three, which are games 3, 4, and 5, will be in Dallas. It will not be Dallas, Dallas, and then Miami, Dallas, and Miami again. It's different in the finals. I think that Miami is going to get one in Miami in the first two games, and they're going to seize the opportunity and basically imprison them in Dallas and take the series there.
All right, Scott?
I agree sort of with Andrew. I think I like Dallas as well. I think the series is going to go 6. I think that, you know, there's a lot of youth on Miami's bench, and I think we're going to see a lot of fouls. I think you're going to see a lot of jostling within the paint, and I think there's going to be some Heat guys in foul trouble. Bosch, I think, is going to get into foul trouble a couple of times in this series. And the guys like Miller and Mario Chalmers and these guys, they're going to have to step up, and I don't know if they're ready for this kind of stage yet. This Dallas team is ready. They're hungry. They're experienced. They've already gotten their heart broken once before by this team. They will not let it happen again. And, you know, this Heat team's going to be around for a while. I think too much too soon for them. I like Dallas in 6.
Listen to you bitches already jumping on my bandwagon. Get off. Get off. One of you pick Miami. Now, obviously, I'm taking Dallas. I picked them from the start. I'm sticking with them. Miami worries me more than Chicago would have, which was my original pick. I could see Miami winning the series, but I'm going to take Dallas in 6 because I don't believe in taking teams in 7 games. That's one of my biggest pet peeves when these analysts pick teams in 7. You know, if you think a team's going to win in 7, why don't you pick them in 6? Because Game 7's obviously going to be a crapshoot. How can you really pick a Game 7 winner? I mean, I just don't see how it's possible. Unless
and
you think a team...
And Game 7's in the finals are so rare. And they never happen.
And I'm just talking about across even all sports. Like, unless you think that some team has a crazy home field advantage, I don't see why you would pick a team in 7 and not just take them in 6, because do you really think this team that you're picking is going to be down 3-2 or even up 3-2 and going to blow that game? And to me, Game 7, picking a team in Game 7 is such a cop-out. It annoys the shit out of me. And so many people freaking do it on talk radio, ESPN. They pick game, you know, it's you might as well say they're going to win one game, you know, that if you're picking Game 7. It's just stupid.
Well, that's
to
why
me.
In Super Bowl predictions you hear, oh, the score is going to be like 34 right. to 31. And it's always about a 7 to 10 point swing.
Right. So, I mean,
the way the game always rolls once it's over, there's always like that extra score that kind of puts it over the top. And in these series, what happens is by the 6th game, I think the team that's in the losing end of the bracket starts to kind of slow down and lament.
And you know, if you like a team enough to pick them in 7, I guess my point is just be ballsy and pick them in 6. And if they get to 7, they get to 7.
Let me make some distinct points. Dirk Nowitzki reminds me a lot in terms of momentum with his fans, like Goldberg in 98. It's almost like they're dying for Dirk to just take over and just keep the bad guys away from the gold.
Yep.
It's hilarious to watch how much love. I've never seen a guy more loved more quickly than Dirk Nowitzki.
And he's also obviously my pick for MVP as well. I think he's going to win the trophy for this.
And the
series.
Ratings are going to be through the roof. If you've seen the Miami Heat's ratings on TNT for the last 2 rounds, it's record breakers. I mean,
yeah, I mean, for the league, there's no doubt they wanted them over Chicago. I mean, to me, there's no doubt about that. And if they couldn't get the Lakers, and the thing with the Lakers is you kind of stuck. And I can actually see that series maybe doing shitty ratings if it was Lakers Heat, because everyone hates both teams. And you kind of like, who gives a shit who wins this? And it doesn't really have the cachet of maybe Celtics Lakers where you tune in for the rivalry.
The Christmas game did very well with Heat Lakers, so who knows? I mean, if the Cavs played the Lakers when people wanted LeBron versus Kobe in the finals, I don't know how well that would have done anyway. Because you have to look at the markets, and the markets here are Dallas and Miami. It's and the Florida area. So, and the interest level with the Miami Heat and their hatred. I think, fuels so much viewership. It's like, I think when the Lakers played the Pistons in 04, the games were unbearable to watch, but the ratings were through the roof because people wanted to see the Lakers fail.
Yep.
And they did.
All right, so let's wrap up with basketball there. There's one other quick sports story we want to get to, and it features a lot of tardy and tawdry. Is tawdry? Tawdry? What's the word?
Tawdry. Tawdry. That's a good word. Depends what you're talking about. But
details, of course, and that surrounds Jim Tressel in Ohio State.
Ah, yes.
And, of course, we all know the key there, as always, is money.
I thought the three of us were going to be the next season of Celebrity Apprentice. I think the three of us.
We need the fake Vince McMahon version when he's doing the $1 million giveaway. It's like a knockoff of that song.
Am I going to fall into a hole of smoke just like Vince?
Yes.
No, that was Derek LaRue. That's why we haven't had him back. So I'm not going to profess to be the biggest college football as far as knowledge base goes. I kind of have a basic idea what's going on, but I'm going to let one of you guys step up and kind of give it the details. Scott, I think you've been following it pretty closely.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you want to give us kind of the details of what's been going on.
Well, it goes back to what happened last year. There was a lot of rumors about Ohio State football players selling a lot of, shall we say, awards, trophies, equipment, uniforms for money. And we're at a level in college football where, you know, for 7 years, the NCAA just pretty much ignored all of USC's antics of blatant cheating because a good USC team is good for college football. Finally, they just ignoring it just made them look like morons. So they had no other choice, and they had to cave, and they buried the USC football program for a couple of years. And if this was like 8 years ago, they probably would have kid gloved the Ohio State program. But at this point, they couldn't. And they pretty much jumped on him immediately. A lot of six players, including quarterback Terrell Pryor, suspended for the first five games of next season. And just more evidence started to come up. Revelations of sold memorabilia, comped tattoos, and alleged drug trafficking. I mean, it was just getting uglier and uglier and uglier. And a guy that I had a lot of respect for, Jim Tressel, pretty much said, I can't stay here any longer. This program, one of the most revered college football programs of the last century, is about to fall into the toilet. I need to walk away or this is going to really be bad. And so I'm sure he was pushed by the trustees.
Yeah,
exactly. In Columbus. And now Jim Tressel is out as head coach at Ohio State, which is devastating to the program. And it's a big smile on the face of a lot of teams in the Big Ten, because now the Big Ten is wide open for 2011.
If you thought Big Ten football was exciting for the last 5 years, wait till you see Big Ten football next year.
Yeah, it's going to be wide open. All these guys, Terrell Pryor, they might as well just leave. But now they're in a pickle because, well, it's too late now. The draft already happened. We don't even know if there's going to be a football season next year. So they might as well just – and the first five games next season for Ohio State is just a complete joke. The one conference game they're missing that they'll be missing will be, I think, Michigan State. But just as a frame of reference, and that's what makes the whole university ban just such a ridiculous farce. Let me just give you the Ohio State schedule. These are the five games, okay, that Terrell Pryor and these four other players are going to miss next season. Saturday, September 3rd, they're playing Akron. Saturday, September 10th, they're playing Toledo. Saturday, September 17th, they're playing Miami, in Miami.
They're in rebuilding mode anyway.
Exactly. Al Golden's new coach there. Saturday, September 24th, home to Colorado, who seems to be rebuilding every year for the last 19 years.
Don't say that about my boy Matt on the Blog of Doom is a Colorado life.
And then Saturday, October.
I can feel his Buffalo tears right now.
And then Saturday, October 1st, they'll miss the first conference game against Michigan State, who's also in rebuilding mode. So even if none of those guys play, they'll still be 5-0. However, now with Jim Tressel out, who the hell knows what's going to happen out there in Columbus? So this is something that needed to happen because the NCAA was going to just have to drop the hammer on this, and it was not going to be pretty.
What killed about the whole judgment was the first thing that they did, which was the Sugar Bowl somehow convincing the NCAA to suspend them in 2011 and not suspend them for the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. Ridiculous.
A fucking joke.
It's ridiculous. And that was a farce.
Jordan, that's two F words.
It was ridiculous.
Actually, it's good for my friend Jordan because he's a Michigan man, like we talked to him about the Fab Five.
Yes. He's loving this.
Maybe, possibly, might beat Ohio State this time.
Well, they'll play November 26th in Ann Arbor. So.
And rumor is that with investigations mulling, it might be a Maurice Clarett situation where at the last second, Pryor might not be eligible for the entire season.
That's entirely possible. But the whole Sugar Bowl thing was I felt bad for Arkansas in that game. They had they had every right to play. They played it fair. Ryan Mallett might have been his final crowning moment before going to the draft, and all these kids still got to play even though half of them sold all their stuff in that previous 2 weeks leading to that Sugar Bowl. And a lot of them after the fact sold their Sugar Bowl stuff. I mean, it was a farce. It was an absolute farce.
You know, I watched a show on NBC was on NBC, but it was on DirecTV also called Friday Night Lights, which I love.
Yep.
I love the show for different reasons, but people laugh at the idea, the premise of it. I'm down here in Louisiana. People laugh at the premise of, oh my God, what a stupid show. Life isn't really all about football. Let me tell you right now, I live in Louisiana. I have a friend who's also on the blog, Clayton. He lives in Shreveport, and he covers for Rivals.com on certain stories. And Greg, another guy on the blog, is from Alabama. Let me tell you right now, and those two can attest, football is life in the SEC. It is everything. And when Arkansas lost that game, let me tell you right now, they are the redheaded stepchild of the SEC for losing that game. Because there is this assumption that the SEC must win all their bowl games. And if they don't, you are a failure. So when they lost that game and Ohio State retained their players, it pissed off a lot of people down here.
Yeah. And just as a side note, just to kind of compare about how big high school football is, when I was in college, 1994, we were traveling my school, the University of New Haven, big Division II power at the time.
Traveling to face Jim Thorpe and the Fighting.
Oh, my God. How long were you waiting for that?
Come on. I got to chime in something. I don't know anything else about college football.
Come on.
But I will say this. When Andrew mentioned Buffalo Tears of our buddy from the blog, there's only one thing that popped in my mind. Okay, go ahead.
I thought you were gonna play the song "Bless the Beast and the Children."
1994, my senior year, we went University of New Haven, big Division II powerhouse at the time, traveled to Abilene, Texas, to take on Abilene Christian University, big D2 team. Now we were playing in the same stadium as the local high school, Abilene Central, I think, or something. We played on a Saturday night. The stadium seats about 40,000. For our game, our college game, we got about 16,000 for our game. The night before, I took a ride with the coaches, our coaching staff. They were scouting this running back, kind of similar to the kid from Dillon High School. It's almost the same thing. Senior tailback, Division II level. He wasn't going to be a big D1 school. He was going to be D2. We went Friday night, exact same stadium, to see this kid's high school team play the other high school team. It was like number 4 against number 10 or something. We walked up to the press box in the midway through the fourth quarter to get the final tally, 37,000 for a high school football game in Abilene, Texas. 37,000. And our college game in the same building the next night only got 16. So for those that think Friday Night Lights is a joke, there's your proof that it's not.
Well, the idea that every game ends at the final second for every game.
No.
That's a joke. And the idea that a man as incredibly attractive as Kyle Chandler could be the head coach of my team is
exactly. They look more like the guy that owns the car dealership.
He's the star of a movie coming up that I'm really looking forward to seeing called Super 8. I looked really quick in the highlights. I'm like, wait a minute, that's Coach Taylor, and he's a cop.
Yep.
But, the whole point around it is that also in Ohio, up in Big Ten country, some of the fan bases are not as inflated. But in Ohio State, it's for real. And this is killing that school.
So, it's not a pretty sight in Columbus right now. But Jim Tressel resigning is a big deal. And I don't know what's going to happen in Columbus this year. It's not going
to get ready for basketball. Get ready for Big Sully to come.
Yeah. I mean, Thad Mata is the big man on campus now in Columbus. That's for sure.
He has to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they can call back John Cooper. I mean, that dude took a lot of crap, and he wasn't that bad of a coach.
Well, he also went 1-11 against Michigan. And that doesn't. I mean, I don't think he ever beat Lloyd Carr, and he couldn't beat Moeller, who was drunk through half of those games.
I've heard that so many times down here with Les, and I got to go on my quick little rant. LSU fans watching this or listening to this, you can't watch me, that are crowning on Les Miles and killing him because he couldn't beat Nick Saban for a couple of years. Go fuck yourself, because that guy does as good of a job as you possibly could. And when Michigan was trying to hire Les Miles twice and he turned them down, Michigan was having a funeral up there and LSU fans were still calling radio stations complaining that he wasn't the right man for the job. After he won a national championship, just to show you how delusional these fan bases can be. I love watching some of these posts about from the Ohio State fans about Tressel's alleged wrongdoings, because the truth hadn't really completely unhurled. But the word is that at Youngstown State, this was brewing with Tressel's program for quite a while, that this was kind of this was the way he worked. And no one really knew about it because he had a good front. So the best joke I heard was that when Osama bin Laden died, I think J.D. Dunn from 411 Mania said, Jim Tressel knew about it, but he didn't know who to tell.
No, I don't think there's going to be a better comment than that one. So let's wrap up with that, because I do want to get into some wrestling, and then we have a few other things to get into. So we will wrap up the Jim Tressel saga, and we will follow that. We're going to plan a college football preview later in the year as well, as we get closer to that. Okay, so let's wrap up that, and we'll go ahead and move on. Let's quickly just talk about Over the Limit, and then we'll talk about any other kind of wrestling news and notes we have going on. And as the summer continues, we're going to kind of taper off the weekly kind of regular weekly episodic wrestling talk and kind of get into more classic stuff. And then when things pick up again in the fall, we'll move back. I'm not saying we're going to neglect. We're still going to do our pay-per-view picks and all that kind of stuff. But week to week, we probably won't delve in as deeply to what's going on. But let me quickly run through the Over the Limit results, and we can talk about the show as a whole. R-Truth defeated Rey Mysterio. No surprise there. Wade Barrett lost to Ezekiel Jackson by DQ, so Wade kept his IC title. Sin Cara defeated Chavo. No surprise there.
Terrible botch at the end of that one.
Yes. Show and Kane defeated Punk and Ryan, but then the next night they lost the titles to Heath Slater, Justin Gabriel.
McGillicuddy and
they're all interchangeable at this point.
I call him now Joko McKenningcuddy.
Pretty much. Him and Otunga.
So yeah, they won the next night, and that's because Big Show apparently needs surgery, so he's gonna be out for a little while. That's why I did the angle with him getting run over by the car. And then Nikki Bella subbing in for Brie Bella during the match defeated Kelly Kelly to retain the title for the Bellas. Randy Orton defeated Christian, match of the night, and another excellent bout between the two of them. Jerry Lawler finally put an end to the feud with Michael Cole. And of course, the nice surprise there is Bret Hart coming out to play off the whole kiss my foot thing, and they humiliated Cole to end that. And John Cena defeats The Miz in what many were not happy with, bullshit match. So let's kind of talk about overall picture and then just a few things about where they're headed now. I kind of want to see where this Christian thing is still headed. I think the Orton stuff as champion is fine. I just wish they didn't do it at the expense of Christian, but I think the story they're telling now is pretty good, and they're having excellent matches as well. And I always like SmackDown when it's under the radar, and that's kind of where it is right now. They don't have the best, biggest names, but they have names of guys that'll work. They're working hard to put on a fun show, and to me, I like SmackDown when it's on that level. I don't know about you guys.
I think it's been – I caught it up the last 2 weeks on the internet, and I think it's been a good show. I had a little bit higher expectations after the draft for SmackDown, because this was before the supplementary draft, which surprisingly really flipped stuff upside down. It was surprising how much of an impact the extra drafting had on the brands. But I felt like right after the Raw draft show that SmackDown had a very, very nice roster. And they kind of flipped things around and moved guys over. But I think that the brand right now is pretty good. It doesn't have the biggest main eventers outside of Randy Orton, but Sheamus has improved vastly. Mark Henry has done himself very well. He's earned his spot. You know, there's a guy that we, you know, Justin and I know this guy. He's in love with Mark Henry. So Mark Henry getting a title push is like, it's like been anticipated like the royal wedding. So it's been very funny to watch Mark Henry get kind of a slightly big push on SmackDown. Sin Cara, I believe, is now kind of making his name on SmackDown, even though he does work some Raw shows from time to time. And I think, and Daniel Bryan's on there. It's been pretty good. I think I like SmackDown. Raw is Raw, man. It's so inconsistent. It's so up and down. You see some great stuff, and then you see some really, really awful stuff. You know, it's the same as it always is.
Overall, I thought the show was okay. I mean, it was a decent secondary show. I really did enjoy Orton and Christian. It was actually a very fun match. I liked R-Truth and Rey. They actually told a pretty good story.
I like, too, how he's just, like, that's how those guys should develop. A guy like R-Truth, you give him an established win, a clean win over, you know, a higher upper card veteran. I think that was a good thing for him to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
They need to get a big giant guy, and he turns out to be Little Jimmy, and they wrestle at SummerSlam. That's what they do. Revenge of Little Jimmy.
Well, you know what? He might be more popular than John Cena, but no. And that's kind of where Truth's going now. He's probably going to kind of fill out, because you know, the key thing now for Raw is that now, obviously, since they've established this whole Cena Rock thing for next year in Miami. That they got to give Cena things to do, so they better have this thing already planned out over the next few months and really give him, you know, stuff to do and not make it look like it's slapped together. And I like the fact that he's going to feud with R-Truth, and you know, they may face each other in the next couple of pay-per-views because you need some stuff to fill out these secondary shows. I don't like the way that the match with it was really dumb, and everything was fine up until the end, and then the end was ridiculously predictable. I don't think the writers care that it's predictable. We sit here and whine about it, but in reality, I don't think they give a crap.
It looked like a carbon copy of the Randy Orton one at Breaking Point. It looked very similar.
Yeah, they made me kind of strong. I didn't like the fact that they had him tap out at the end. I was hoping they'd do like knock him unconscious or Riley, because they had Riley turn face the next night anyway. They should have had Riley like throw in the towel without making Miz quit.
Yeah,
something like that, and at least keep Miz strong, and then do the face turn the next night. At least make it somewhat, some kind of, you know, some type of backstory or some type of impetus for it to make any sense. But overall, it wasn't a bad show. I mean, I enjoyed the. Obviously, they didn't do a huge thing about Randy Savage. They did it more the next night on Raw because obviously you have a bigger audience.
Yeah, so more people watch Raw than the pay per view. Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
There there were two elbows in the show. Wade Barrett had an okay transition move elbow. And CM Punk did more of the trademark elbow, and he missed it. But it got a pretty nice pop.
And of right. course, Punk's tights the next night were tremendous as well.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Yes. And yeah, and we were kind of crossing our fingers that the right guy was going to be able to do some type of tribute. And sure enough, he comes up with the pin. He wore the exact same colors as Savage did at WrestleMania 3 against Steamboat. Pink tights, yellow boots, and obviously put his own name on it, which kept him a heel. If he was a babyface, probably would have Macho Man on the back.
And unfortunately, I think Over the Limit ended a streak of good pay-per-views, because I thought since about the Royal Rumble, I think all the WWE pay-per-views have been either good or good or solid. I thought Extreme Rules was actually very good. I was surprised at how good it was.
Yeah, Extreme Rules wasn't bad. I'm kind of looking forward to the way to see how these feuds kind of pan out over the next 3 months as we head towards Capital Punishment. Sounds like an old WCW 1990 pay-per-view.
Capital Combat, baby.
There is Capital, yeah. If we see RoboCop at this show, I'm done. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how that show's going to get laid out. And, you know, interesting to see the different matchups. I think Justin and I had said on our last podcast when we talked about making our picks for the show that we were at least happy that the matchups were kind of different and fresh, and that's what these secondary pay-per-views are needed for. They're needed to kind of, you know, do some stuff. You can take chances and Yeah, you can take some chances and have some fun and give the viewers just something fun to watch. Don't take it so seriously. And you know,
and that's why having John Cena and Randy Orton as your champions makes no sense. That's the only thing that I didn't like. You take the hot commodity that you have with The Miz coming off of a big win in the main event of the WrestleMania show, albeit the match was bad, but you just take the belt right off of him, and then you give Christian the belt, and then you take the belt right off of him in months that are going to be forgettable at best.
I'm fine with Cena taking it the way he did, only because I think they want him and Rock to be for the title at WrestleMania, and I think it's going to mean more if he holds it until then, or at least if he's going to lose it, I think it should be to Del Rio for a few months. But at this point, I think he should just hold it for the year.
My problem with John Cena is that he's in safety mode until March. They cannot let him get seriously injured.
But that's why I kind of like putting him in these few. It almost takes us back to like '96 with Shawn Michaels. Well, you just have a guy going out there every month, huh?
Fighting champion.
Yeah, every month he faces a new competitor or a feud lasts a couple months, and that's how you kill this year with him. So you have him fight R-Truth the next 2 months, then you have him fight Del Rio. Then you elevate guys up to that level to get a little title feud, and I think it's fine. And then that's how you build a champion. And I know a lot of people don't like John Cena, but for bad or worse right now, he's in that position to fight The Rock.
He's
and
the star of the show, but I think quality-wise, the problem for me with Cena is that I think he's pretty much done. He's in Hogan mode. He's in 92 Hogan mode where he's just there for show. I mean, wrestling is just brutal. I can't watch it. Randy Orton has kind of reinvigorated himself. I think it's the beard.
I like the beard too.
I saw that guy do a full-on, crack your ball sack jumping jack on SmackDown like he was an 8-year-old boy. He is excited.
Well, you know what a big part of it, too, I think, is he can now be the top face. He doesn't have to kind of be different. It's his show. So I think it fits well for him to kind of be in that role of being the main guy. And, he's the star of the show now. And I think Christian can settle nicely into kind of being his buddy right now and then eventually into a heel to feud with him. And I think it's a good spot for Christian, too. Now, obviously, I'd rather see him get a long title reign, but I think where he is not get buried like some people are worried. I think he's still in a good spot.
I'm going to be interested in seeing the match with Randy Orton and Sheamus whenever they have it, whether it be the pay-per-view, whether it be on free TV, because I remember when they feuded in August, I could not watch their matches. They were bad. And it's going to be interesting to see with that SmackDown kind of work ethic kind of atmosphere that Michael Hayes kind of implements. It's going to be interesting to see what you see, because Sheamus has definitely improved since a year ago when
he
gave him two title reigns and he wasn't ready.
They definitely rushed it with him.
And Randy Orton also looks better.
Yeah, I think the two of them in a different environment is just going to breed, creativity and I think you're just going to see better matches. I agree, Andrew. I think the matches last year weren't awful. But you wanted something more. You were begging for something more, and you only got something ordinary.
And Orton's a stronger face now than he was at that point, correct?
Yeah. It also doesn't help that Sheamus and The Miz had to burn those titles off of – well, burn feuds off of a John Cena that – man, I'm shitting on this guy. But it's a John Cena that is completely immobile, cannot work a good match anymore. The last good match I saw him in, I think, was with Batista at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I was about to say, that was a pretty good match. Yeah.
I mean, that's about it. I mean, he's pretty much done as a wrestler. And watching, here's the problem with having John Cena as your fighting champion. You have young guys trying to come on up, but if the match is bad, the young guy takes the fall. And Vince's, perspective on it will be, well, the match was bad and didn't get a good reaction because Alberto Del Rio didn't get enough heat or he didn't do everything he was supposed to do. So if the match is bad and doesn't get over, the young guy is going to have to take the tumble back to the mid card, and that's a shame.
All right, so I quickly just wanted to hit a couple news bits, and then wanted to get into something else. I just read tonight that a top lucha heel, Averno, who worked with CMLL, has been signed by WWE. Apparently, he had feuded with Sin Cara, then known as Mystico, while in Mexico. So it looks like they're bringing in maybe a big heel, and it seems like they really want to tap into that Mexican audience now. So they're bringing in a heel to potentially feud with Sin Cara, and I like the way they're slowly building Sin Cara. I think they're doing a nice job not rushing him. I like that each week they're kind of stepping him up a level.
I think the problem here also is that when a spot is fucked up, we saw this on Tough Enough, when a spot is messed up on both ends, it's hard to put blame on one guy. But it seems like with all of Sin Cara's matches, with his offense and how distinct it is, and how it's not as kind of like streamlined as Rey Mysterio's is, where he's worked with these guys for years and years and years, it seems like either people are deliberately messing up moves when they wrestle Sin Cara, or there's just a lack of communication between him and the other guys, and the matches are coming off really, really scratchy.
Right.
And I think this is one of the reasons. They're getting a guy that knows him, that they know can go, you know, spot one, spot two, spot three, spot four, seamlessly and not have too many issues. They have a match on YouTube, I believe, in Japan this year when he was still Mystico and Averno wrestled him. It's a very good match. But this was in Japan. It was a totally different, you know, style of work.
I kind of like that it's a little rough, though, and not, you know, everything is so freaking polished nowadays. I think that's why I like this R-Truth heel push so much. He just is so off the map compared to what they usually do. I like that he spews gibberish and you have no idea what the hell he's even talking about, and then he wrestles unorthodox. They need different guys. He's different looking, he's different style, he's different attitude, and it's been such a homogenized product for so long now, and they're doing more with Zack Ryder and John Cena right now.
When R-Truth went on his heel kind of tandem, not after the smoking of the cigarette in the United Kingdom, he started doing that Lil Jimmy stuff, and a guy who's become a cult hero on the internet, Scott Stanford, because of his Z True Hollywood story and
yes.
Zack Ryder. His interviews with R-Truth are becoming, they're like Ali and Cosell. You know? They're becoming hilarious to watch. And
Scott Stanford's he's very good at his job. He's a good announcer.
He's a Jersey boy.
Yeah, he's a good announcer, and he's good in the backstage stuff. And actually, Zack Ryder is getting more. He was just on just now Raw with Cena again. He's getting more TV time like they said he was going to. And it's nice to see them actually rewarding him for going out and putting out this hard
work. Well, not just that. I think Cena and Zack Ryder are a legitimate friend. I think Cena does want Zack Ryder to kind of get over. And even though it was muffed because the technical difficulties dominated the beginning of the Raw show today, I can even see R-Truth giving Zack a plug. I think Zack seems like a likable guy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, people want to see be successful, but the company won't allow it.
All right. And speaking of people that fans want to see successful, and that brings us to Karma. Just a quick update. Scott's a little bit of a spoiler, but I don't know if you really care at this point.
Nah.
It's pretty obvious. So Karma came out tonight and cut a promo. I was actually listening to a little bit while you guys were talking about Trestle. She came out and talked about her story, saying that she never thought she'd make it, and she actually brought up about how on Tough Enough, in the second season of Tough Enough, she tried out and Jim Ross told her she was too fat to make it as a diva. She went to Japan and it became a star and then came here, but she did announce that she was pregnant and said that she'll be back in 9 months basically to kick everyone's ass. So, and then the Bellas came out and talked shit about her, and then she left.
In real life, Kong has a very light voice.
She did. She talked normal here. She didn't have a deep... She talked normal. And I didn't think they would actually have her come out and say she was pregnant, but she did. Because it makes sense, I guess. They couldn't really do a beatdown angle.
If she should go back to TNA and admit that the father of her love child was Bubba the Love Sponge. That was, you know, and they would dedicate the baby to Hayden. That would pretty much be the way TNA would do it, because Vince Russo's a genius.
Hey, it's Impact Wrestling now.
You know, I'm surprised they went this way. I think another way they could have went, but I guess they didn't really want to, you know, risk, obviously, at all her pregnancy. But they could have done something like Vader in 96 and had her just rough someone up and then they suspend her for 9 months, you know, something like that. But I guess it would have been too obvious. I mean, might as well just have her come out and admit the truth. It's going to be out on all the sites anyway.
Exactly. Right. What, you know, it's not, you know, I always say that I think the WWE kind of put the genie back in the bottle with the PG kind of branding, but I mean, they're not stupid. They know that people are going to find out anyway what's going on in the ins and outs of the backstage. So, I mean, you saw that with Jeff Hardy. They didn't hide the fact that people knew Jeff Hardy had drug issues. And they pretty much put it out there. This guy's got problems.
Right.
And he left. You know, they kayfabed it with a loser leaves town thing. But CM Punk was not afraid to say, hey, this dude is a fucking idiot. And if he's your hero, you're an idiot too. You know?
All right, so I kind of want to wrap up the wrestling there for now. You know, we kind of set the stage. We'll see where things go. We'll kind of jump back into the current scene when we do the Capital Punishment picks in a couple weeks. Until then, we'll kind of table this, because I don't think there's too much going on excitement. So yeah. What I want to do actually right now is I want to bring on another guest. He's a longtime friend of ours, and he has a big, big event coming up this weekend. Now, I haven't told him why we're having him on. He does know we're calling him. So we're going to do that right now, and we're going to surprise him a little bit with the subject. Of course, Scott, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
and actually, any other listeners probably know what we're talking about as well, because we've mentioned it a few times. So I'm going to, for the first time, well, actually, never mind, we did it with Andrew, but our first time cold calling somebody that isn't really ready for this. So let's see how this goes.
It should be interesting.
Is anyone there?
We should do Jimmy Hart at the open when he does it. Ring, ring.
Andrew, like for... you there?
Yeah, you should have Great Khali yell at him.
Is he there? Hello?
Nothing yet.
Failure. Let me try again. All right, you guys vamp for a minute. Go ahead. I'll try and figure this out.
So, we didn't get a really chance to let's backtrack a bit, Andrew. I actually like Mike Brown as the next head coach of the Lakers. Two reasons. Number one, I think he will focus on defense because clearly the last round and a half of the playoffs, the Lakers didn't play any. Secondly, I think his kind of personality and the way he handles young players, I think will fit well with a team of a little bit more experienced and a little older. And I think Kobe will relate to him. I think enough of this Phil Jackson stuff. I love Phil, but Phil is older, and I don't think the Lakers need that same kind of Zen nonsense. It's not really nonsense, but I don't think they need a clone of him. I think they need a young guy who I think can relate to this roster. I think they'll mesh well. And, you know, he took a team of LeBron and a bunch of stiffs to 66 wins. Mm-hmm. And this team is, I think, a little more overall talented than they were.
People forget with the Lakers when Magic was there, Pat Riley left, and they went to the finals, and their head coach was Mike Dunleavy.
Exactly, you know, yeah.
They've done it before with nameless, faceless coaches. My problem with Mike is that in his specific situation in Cleveland, he's a great defensive coach, and he does really good motivating and getting reserves like Anderson Barajal and Delonte West to basically play over their heads. The problem is the clear schism on that team is that LeBron wouldn't listen to Mike Brown and did whatever he wanted. What do you think is going to happen when you have three or four airheaded superstars who want to do whatever they want in L.A. in a big market like that outside of Cleveland, which is a fishbowl? It's going to be a daunting effort for Mike Brown.
We'll see.
But let's see, it might be something like Rick Carlisle. When Rick Carlisle got hired, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be an epic fail. And he's doing himself very well, you know. You never know how these things can turn.
Exactly.
All right, guys, so good chat there, but I think we have our boy on the line right now. I'm telling him to open his mic, so let's see if he's with us. Matt, you there?
What's up, man?
We wanted to bring you on to talk to you about a special event you got coming up this weekend.
I thought he was going to play Hot and Cold, but he didn't.
It should have been. Either that or California Girls.
So for those of you who may not know, our young Matt Rotella is growing up, and the love child of Scott Criscolo, of course, half his age. Matt has a very big event coming up this August. Of course, he's getting married. And this weekend, I had the pleasure of arranging his bachelor party. Now, of course, that's coming up this Saturday evening. And Scott and I are going to take some notes, I think, throughout the night. And we're going to report back here on next week's show. Matt, we're going to have you back on. So why don't you tell us a little bit now. We've neglected you to tell you a lot of the details because that's how I wanted it. You know the basics.
I don't want to know any of the details.
I'm not going to give you any. We've come this
good.
Far.
I don't want to know one damn thing.
We only got five more days. So I want you to, on the scale of 1 to 10, I want you to share your excitement level with us.
About 150.
Okay, so you're looking That's forward to answer. This evening as well, right? So now, what are your expectations? Are you expecting, on the hangover scale, where are you expecting this bachelor party to rank on the hangover scale?
On the hangover scale? Well, I've never actually seen the movie, so...
Oh, my Lord, you've seen every other movie under the frickin' sun, including the Care Bear movie, 8 times. And you haven't seen the hangover?
The lessons you learn from the Care Bears.
This might be the only time in podcast history that the Care Bears has been name-dropped twice.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and hopefully the only time, too.
Have you ever mentioned the Gummy Bears?
No.
I created it first.
So, Matt.
The Gummy Bear song.
Unbeknownst to you, Matt, a few of us have actually been laying down some lines, and not cocaine, some betting lines for this weekend. And, you know, we have various ones. who's most likely to get thrown out, who's most likely to pass out while there.
Well, thrown out's easy, so I'm not even going to go with that one.
The most likely to throw up, the most likely to fall in love at the club. You know, we have a lot, wide range, most likely to conduct a STD on that evening. So are there any, in particular, any betting lines that you'd like to set for this evening as far as, you know, the particular crew that's coming? Is there any you'd like to set up ahead of time? You know, any most likely to do this so we could set some odds on it?
Well, Kicked Out, I think, is easy. I'm not going to say the name, so I know you know who I'm referring to.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I know Justin does too, so I'm not even going to go there. Mm-hmm. Most likely to puke.
I'm hoping it's you.
I'm pretty much going to say it's going to be me. I will put money on me.
Okay.
To puke. I'm not saying that I'm going to be the only one, but the most likely it's going to be me.
Okay. Now, our very own Scott is actually up for one of these. And he's off the board because of how likely this is to happen, that he's going to spend too much at the club and stomp off angrily at the end of the night. So that's off the board right now.
You know what they need, Justin? They need
as long as he doesn't contract any kind of STD, he can do whatever he wants.
No.
They need Stone Cold Steve Austin and midgets playing basketball so
yes.
that you can impersonate him again.
Yeah. You like that impersonation, huh?
Do it again.
We got these two fucking dwarves coming out here to play some basketball. Let's go after the break.
Coming up on top of them. Fucking midget.
That was one of the greatest promos of all time for on top of them. And coming up after this break, we're going to have a midget basketball game.
And just a couple for those people who are watching, though, we're down to a final two. I think it's
no, don't spoil it. I didn't
watch it yet. So
gotta watch
quiet.
It later.
Don't cover your ears.
No, don't even say it. There's
no
covering
talk about
of ears.
It.
That's
we're muting you. No,
that's it. No talking. We will talk about it next week because Scott and I will both watch it tomorrow or later tonight.
Yeah.
You haven't seen it yet? Okay.
All right.
No, I'll watch it tomorrow because I gotta. Crash
it's a good.
It, but...
It's very competitive. This was probably the most competitive Tough Enough I've seen so far.
Looking forward to it. And, you know, I'm glad a lot of people have gotten into it too. Couple of friends of mine that aren't even big wrestling fans have been watching it, so it's good to know. I hope they definitely bring it back for a second season. So Matt, we want to thank you for joining us here tonight, and we are going to have you back on next week to kind of wrap up the party. And I know,
hopefully, I remember of it, so I could give my analysis of it.
Well, Scott and I, you know, we really wanted to video podcast the whole night and then post it up for our fans, or at least do a live podcast. You won't let us, unfortunately. So. The most we're going to be able to do is just come back with the sort of details.
Going to be edited details. I don't want much information getting back to you-know-who.
All right. Well, besides the fact that there is no sex in the champagne room, I'm going to leave you with this last tidbit, and then we're going to go ahead and let you get back to watching the Care Bears or Full House, whatever the hell you were watching before we brought you in. So we'll leave you with that. Do not fall in love with a stripper, please. You know, I don't think your best man Dan's going to want to have to step up to the altar when you run off with your stripper friend. So we will leave you with that, Matt, and we'll let you go, and we're going to go ahead and start wrapping up the show. So thanks for joining us. We'll have you back on next week to wrap
Sounds
up the
good.
Feedback on your big night.
Have All a right. good one, man.
Later.
All right, guys, just wanted to hit up some really quick feedback, and then we'll go, because I think we're already hitting quite the wall on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like always when I'm on.
No, you were good. You were a little more succinct this week, Andrew, so it's good.
I'm tired.
On last week, of course, on May 23rd, was the 12-year anniversary of the passing of Owen Hart. So I posted a topic to kind of got lost, actually, with the Randy Savage passing. So I wanted to have some feedback to read, and I asked the Place to Be Nation to check in on Owen. Karen Polland.
The Hot Scott.
Yes, he was the first one up, as always. Owen's finest match was with Bret at WrestleMania 10. Owen stepped out of Bret's shadow, and for the next 5 years would have a great career. It's a damn shame his life had to end early in a tragic way. Jeremy Nichols. I was never a fan of Owen, I'm being honest, but it's still tragic what happened to him. Someone actually unliked that. So, oh, no, wait, maybe that was me who liked. I don't know what happened. Unlike? Can you unlike something? I'm not sure.
Oh, I don't know. Can you? I never tried before. I didn't even think there was an option for it.
Maybe we liked it, and then it's telling us we can unlike it. I think so. Anyway, Corey Ferreira. I still watch a lot of old Owen footage, and he is still entertaining to watch, either at a match or promo cutting. I just watched Shawn and Davey Boy Smith from 96 King of the Ring, and Owen on commentary stole the show, putting Davey over so huge. Also, Owen winning his Slammy is a great moment. So it's like he just won the world title at Mania. He's so damn happy. And I agree. That's one of my favorite pay-per-views of all time just because of his commentary. Owen was just tremendous and an old school, you know, bigoted heel, heel role. Derek LaRue, Owen was one of the best. What a career he had, winning every title but the big one, and probably would have at some point. He should be included next time Mania is in Canada. I'm guessing he means to the Hall of Fame. And Josh Richer comes at us with a hamburger in the face. WrestleMania 10 Revenge Tour, Providence Civic Center, enough said. And Josh, of course I know exactly what you're talking about. Him and I were in attendance at the WrestleMania 10 Revenge Tour in April 94, and one of the funnier moments was during the Bret Owen match. Someone threw a hamburger and hit Owen in the head with it. From the crowd, so that was kind of a moment we've always kind of laughed about. So other than that, the only other feedback we had was just kind of us all going back and forth about Over the Limit, making fun of Graham for not having Skype. That was pretty funny. And then, of course, WrestleMania 5, we already read the feedback. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up. You got the NBA predictions, you got our wrestling talk, and you got the Matt Rotella Bachelor Party update. So we will be back later this week, of course, on Wednesday night. We will be bringing you our Vintage Vault on SummerSlam 89. So to all our new fans, be sure to tune in that night. Later on that night, we'll have that up as well. Check out our archive prior to then. And also, we want to thank Andrew, as always, for joining us. Andrew, we'll have you back on. We'll have to do a little college basketball. I wanted to talk about my boy Marshawn Brooks tonight. He's quickly rising up the draft.
The draft is so weak. I love the draft regardless. I'm gonna want to watch it. And Brooks looked very good in his
I've seen him going as high as 12 in some of these things. So
it's such a weak draft. You know, it's helping him a lot. I will say, as an aside, for SummerSlam 89, and I hope y'all talk about it, that might be one of the hottest crowds I've ever seen.
Yes.
They were red hot for everything.
Well, Andrew, do us a favor. When we post, I'll post up tomorrow that we're going to be talking about it. So, you know, leave your feedback about it there. We'll read it.
Definitely.
Okay, so yeah, we'll do a draft podcast at the end of June, and we'll get into Brooks and some other stuff going on there. So Andrew, thanks as always. Scott, we'll wrap up now. We will be back Wednesday night. Thank you to all our new listeners. We hope you like this marriage with the history of WWE.com. Check out all our stuff, Bigelow34ProBoards.com, historyofWWE.com, and then the Facebook pages. So for Scott Griscolo, I'm Justin Rosero, and we will talk to you later this week.
Peace.